live from the downtown studio. The Flames Talk postgame show starts now. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All right, your final score from T-Mobile Arena this evening to wrap up a quick back-to-back set for the Flames on the road. Flames fall 3-0 to the Vegas Golden Knights as we get our Flames Talk postgame show underway on this Sunday. Pat Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast. Phone lines are open at 403-240-4444. Text line at 960-960. Mick on our marquee matchup. By the way, Megan Mickelson is with us, the color voice of the Flames. Maybe I'll introduce you before going right to you. Megan Mickelson with us as well. Hi, Mick. Our marquee matchup brought to you by Country Hills Toyota tonight. We were talking about how there is the potential for the Flames to make a real statement tonight. Now, they don't win the game, and Vegas clearly deserving of the win. But at the very least, I think if you're the Flames, you can come away knowing that you fought hard for 60 and you just ran into a really elite hockey team who played their game for 62.
Yeah, I mean, for me, watching this game anyways and analyzing it, I think they did make a statement. Like, that was a really gutsy game for the Flames. I mean, you're coming in on a second half of back-to-back and playing the best home team in the NHL, and the way they hung around in that one and just continued to push and to press, and, you know, the momentum of the game, no matter what was happening on the end of the Vegas Golden Knights, you could tell the Flames, they were just battling with absolutely everything they had to try to grab the momentum back. So, you know, a really impressive, resilient effort from the group, I thought. And the difference was special teams. And, you know, I remember thinking early on in the game on the 5-on-3 when they didn't score, and I was like, oh, this could be trouble because the Vegas Golden Knights, I mean, it's so hard to score on them 5-on-5. Almost impossible, it seems like, at times, that you really have to take advantage of your power plays when you have the opportunity. And then the Golden Knights, they do take advantage and score on the power play. So that was the biggest difference for me. And Dan Vladar, I mean, I think he made a statement with the way that he played, too. He made some absolute 10-bell saves, especially in the first period. So, I mean, I'm really impressed with the effort that this group put forth on the ice tonight.
That was your marquee matchup tonight, brought to you by Country Hills Toyota. The 2024 Boxing Week blowout is on at the giant Country Hills Toyota. For a limited time, save $3,000 to $5,000 on every Tundra. It's time to Toyota. Mick, let's select the hardest working Flame tonight. Which way are you leaning for hardest working Flame tonight?
Yeah, this is not so much based on stat line, though, looking at it. Really quite impressive. Matt Coronato, I thought, had just an absolutely incredible game. He ended up with 9 shot attempts and took some face-offs as well, as we have seen him do as of late. But I just thought that, you know, he was one guy that really stood out to me. He was just absolutely relentless on pucks, had some really good opportunities as well, played a smart, responsible game. So I'm going to go with Coronato.
Yeah, Matt Coronato, hardest working Flame tonight. That line with him, Michael Backlund, and Blake Coleman, dynamite again, and really helped the Flames this evening. Okay, Mick, so now it's Vancouver on Tuesday, final game of 2024. That shapes up to be a big one, hey?
Yeah, and I mean, you have to turn the page pretty quickly on this one, but I think they can go home after these two games and feeling pretty good. It was a good road game, and like I said, the difference was specialty teams, so you make a couple of tweaks, a couple of adjustments, but it is a really quick turnaround. You want to try to get as much rest as you can, and you're going to have to be sharp heading into that one.
Good stuff, Mick. Get home safe. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Pat.
Megan Mickelson signing off from Las Vegas, Nevada, where the Flames fall 3-0 to the Golden Knights on this Sunday night. So the Flames go 1-1 on this 2-game back-to-back road trip. This felt like it was going to be a tough one regardless. It felt like it was going to be one of those nights that, you know, it was going to take maybe a slightly off night for Vegas and a Herculean effort from the Flames. And I think Calgary definitely did as close to their side of it as they could. I mean, you're on the second half of the back-to-back. Vegas was not. Vegas played on Friday, and the Flames played on Saturday. So Vegas was the more rested of the group, no doubt about that. And on top of that, they're now tied for number one overall. Like, this is one of the best teams on the planet right now. And so, you know, there's also that to take into account, right? Like, we're also talking about one of the best teams. And you know, if Vegas plays the way they're capable of, they might win this game regardless of what the Flames do, right? Like, that's how good the Vegas Golden Knights can be. And so the Flames played well, but Vegas probably played better, plus as the rested group. That's kind of how I would see this one this evening. Ilya Samsonov, very good. Got to give a shout out to Dan Vladar, who kept the Flames in this game, especially in the first period. You know, I thought the Flames settled in a little bit more and kind of got a little better as this game went along. They were definitely the second best team for a vast majority of the first period. Second period, a little bit more even. And the third period, I thought they pushed. I mean, they didn't get a ton of opportunities chasing the game, but at the very least, I thought they pushed and had their best period of the game. Unfortunately, not able to find that one goal. But, you know, give a ton of credit to Vegas. That's a very good hockey team. But also give a ton of credit to the Flames for fighting hard on the second half of back-to-back tonight. Okay, it's time to go from the Flames dressing room, brought to you by Canyon Plumbing and Heating. Replace your furnace with upgrades like state-of-the-art Wi-Fi thermostats and indoor air quality solutions. Financing options available. For more info, visit canyonplumbing.com. Head coach Ryan Huska just wrapped up on the road in Vegas following tonight's 3-0 setback against the Golden Knights.
What did you make of your group's overall effort?
I thought the effort was good tonight. You know, in close games like that, it's always the one mistake, and they play that way. That's why they're one of the better teams. That they're a heavier team. That when you force something or make a mistake, they can make you pay. And I thought that's what happened when we gave up the first goal. But we just weren't able to find the offense that we needed tonight, too. But it wasn't from a lack of effort at all.
Frustrating given the 5-on-3, I would imagine. I don't know if it's too simple to point at that.
Well, you know, they scored on their power play. We didn't score on ours. So I would say, though, the 5-on-3 that we had tonight was significantly better than the one we had at home. It was probably over a month ago now. But those are situations where you have to grab hold of it and you have to find a way to score. And unfortunately, we weren't able to do that tonight.
You were juggling up the third and fourth lines a little bit. Did you need to see more jam, more hits, more good shifts, anything from them?
Yeah, the first period was a little bit different because of the penalties and the power plays that were going on. But, you know, I thought we might have been a night where we might have needed to create a little bit more offensively. So putting Kuzi up with some offensive players was the reason behind that.
He won't be happy, but what did you think of Dan's performance?
I thought he was our best player tonight. Yeah, he made some saves and he gave us a chance to win.
He showed some real compete early on.
Yeah, totally.
The boost that you would hope they need.
Yeah, right through the game. I thought he was really good tonight.
Positives you take from this one as you have to flip the page pretty quick?
Like we talked about, it was a hard game. Now you turn the page and you get ready for another hard game against Vancouver.
There you go. That is head coach Ryan Huska. Post game, your final score, Flames fall 3-0 to the Golden Knights. That's our look from the Flames dressing room, brought to you by Canyon Plumbing and Heating. Replace your furnace with upgrades like state-of-the-art Wi-Fi thermostats and indoor air quality solutions. Financing options available. For more info, visit canyonplumbing.com. So the Flames take a 3-1 win last night in San Jose. They follow that up with a hard-fought but 3-0 setback against the Vegas Golden Knights tonight. Okay, the phone lines are open. 403-240-4444. Got three lines open right now if you want to chat on this Sunday night. And the text line's open as well at 960-960. Lots of text to roll through on this Sunday evening. So call now if you want to chat on our Flames Talk post-game show or fire us a text at 960-960. Tonight's game has been brought to you by South Point Toyota. Flames Talk post-game is available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, and live right here. This is Calgary Flames Hockey on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Flames Talk post-game show continues on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Following a Flames 3-0 loss on the road tonight in Vegas, as we are well underway on your Flames Talk post-game show. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, and live right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Hopefully you're having a wonderful Sunday if you're listening live with us, or whenever you're listening, hopefully everything is good. The penultimate game of 2024 for the Calgary Flames this evening in Vegas, as they drop to 0-2 against the rolling Golden Knights, who have now won six in a row. Flames split this back-to-back set on the road. Win last night in San Jose on the Saturday, and then tonight, Sunday in Vegas, they fall 3-0. I feel really bad for Dan Vladar. You know, they have used him in these situations a lot this year. By these situations, I mean on the second half of the back-to-back. I mean against the better team on the back-to-back. I mean, there's no question who the better team and the tougher opponent is, San Jose or Vegas. And Vladar got the tough outing, and he was spectacular. And I know he picks up the L, and I know he drops to below 500 on his record, but Dan Vladar was Calgary's best Flame. You just heard it from Ryan Huska. And if Vladar isn't spectacular in the first period, this game isn't close, and the Flames aren't, you know, we're not talking about a gutsy effort from the Flames because they've been blown out of the water in the first period. That's how good Vladar was in period number one, and he still only allows 2 goals on 36 when it's all said and done. It is time for tonight's Save of the Game, brought to you by Shane Holmes, and Dan Vladar's Save of the Game, as you'd expect, comes in period number one.
Puck ends up deflecting back to his defenseman. It is now shot into Flames territory. Ball will pick it up in behind his net. He gives it to Anderson, who gives it away. Eichel centers it. Stone, robbed by Vladar, who makes one of the saves of the season on the Golden Knights captain.
So that ends up being one of the 34 stops made by Dan Vladar tonight, and that is his save of the game, brought to you by Shane Holmes. For every save a Flames goaltender makes, Shane Holmes donates $5 to Kidsport Calgary. Visit ShaneHolmes.com, the better way to build. And yeah, you'll go right back to Dustin Wolf likely on Tuesday night, New Year's Eve against Vancouver, but I think... Or I hope anyway, that this maybe dispels some of the discourse and some of the frustration that seems to be out there whenever we find out that Dan Vladar is going to get a start. Like, and obviously this one was a little bit different because it was the second half of back to back. But when I remember on the homestand, there were two games left before Christmas. There was the, I don't even remember who they played, but then they played Chicago and Wolf got the start and Vladar got the start in the second last game of the homestand. And it's, you know, everything blends together for me. But I just remember, you know, people were really upset about Vladar getting the start. I was like, guys, like Dan needs to play too. And part of Dustin Wolf's success is the fact he's, I firmly believe, part of Dustin Wolf's success this year is the fact that he's not going every night and that he's not being overworked. And Vladar consistently gives the Flames a chance to win as well. And if you were to say one of the two goaltenders or who of the two goaltenders has been better, yeah, I grant you that Wolf has, I think, slightly outplayed Vladar, but that doesn't mean that Vladar should stop getting games, and I think his outing tonight is a good reason why. Really solid night from Dan Vladar, even though he picks up the L. Flames lose this game 3-0. Okay, let's get to the text line at 960-960 on this Sunday night. Text line's always open for you. This says, frustrating loss pass. Try that again. Frustrating loss, Pat. Rasmus's penalty was unnecessary, but I was annoyed that it took White Cloud yelling to the ref for them to even notice it. Then they proceed to not call a blatant slash on Coronado. That being said, the penalty kill looked great otherwise, and the first 30 minutes were strong. Vladar was amazing throughout and kept the boys in it. It's clear that scoring continues to be an issue for this team. Talk to you on New Year's Eve, Pat. Have a great night. That comes from Scotty in Victoria. Yeah, the penalty that Rasmus took that led to the 2-0 goal was a frustrating one. It was definitely a holding the stick penalty. I would be more frustrated that it was a holding the stick call in the offensive zone and pretty blatant. I get that you're like, well, were you going to call it before White Cloud yelled? Maybe, maybe not, but that's part of it being a human game, right? And humans officiating this game. I thought it was a penalty for sure. And the fact that it was 200 feet from Calgary's net, even more frustrating. You just kind of got the feel, hey, after Anderson took that penalty, that one was going to come back and bite them. And it did. Olofsson scored the insurance goal on that power play. And, you know, it's not the game winner. Howden's goal is the game winner in this one. But you just kind of felt that they'd already killed off 3 Vegas power plays, and then Anderson takes one 200 feet away. Remember before that, Lomberg had taken one 200 feet away for the goalie interference. You're like, this one feels like it's going to end up in the back of Calgary's net, and it did. But Did that cost Calgary the game? No, because they didn't score a goal in this one. Samsonov got the shutout, and they did have trouble generating offense for a good chunk of this hockey game. This one from Francesco. Merry Christmas to all. Thank you for including me in your show. Tough loss for the Flames. A great effort, just needing that first goal, which may have never happened even with more shots. Samsonov's playing within a goalie-strong organization and was brimming with confidence for sure. That said, I really believe in adding a sniper to the lineup, and I look forward to discussing this further in future calls. The Flames can make the playoffs and Calgary can be proud of Craig adding Matt Stage into the organization. He seems to be making the right moves. Taylor Hall is from Calgary and maybe worth a mention as a possible addition. Have a great night. Good night. Francesco and I have not seen eye to eye on this one throughout. Look, I'm not suggesting that the Flames should just stand pat, period, end of story, no discussion. But going out and getting a sniper, unless it's going to be somebody that fits the long-term vision of the Flames, I still don't think makes a lick of sense. I really don't. And I don't think a guy like Taylor Hall is the type of guy that the Flames should be going to target. Taylor Hall is 30-plus years old and is not a guy that fits the long-term vision of the Flames. Taylor Hall is 33. He's having a fine season. He's got 7 goals and 19 points. But that is, in my opinion, that is not the type of player the Flames should be targeting, because that's a target for right now. And right now is important, but it's not the priority. And that's where Francesco and I are probably never going to see eye to eye on that one. This says, Patty, the Flames just don't measure up to the best. They worked hard, but need more premium players. Just wondering why 96 was in. Is it his last chance to impress? They brought Miramanov and Kuzmenko back in because they felt they needed to get them back in, and because they felt they needed a little energy infusion going into the second half of a back-to-back. That's why they did it. I thought Miramanov played well. I thought Miramanov actually had himself a pretty decent game, all things considered, especially knowing that was his first game in quite some time. He had missed 5 straight games as a healthy scratch, so I thought it was a really nice game from Miramanov and a nice return to the lineup for him. He ended up with 4 shot attempts in this game. So I thought a solid night for Miramanov, all things considered. And I thought fit well right back on that pairing with Weegar. So I thought it was an impressive return for Miramanov. I did not love Kuzmenko in the slightest. I thought he was a non-factor at best. Started on the line with Rooney and Lomberg, then got moved up to the line with Sharon Govich and Zeri as Kuzmenko and Pelche swapped. But no, I didn't think Kuzmenko did much of anything. Walker Dewar has struggled too, so I don't know if it's an automatic that you take Kuzmenko out, because I do think it's important to try to get him to return to being a confident player. I do think he's running out of opportunities, but I don't know if I'd be taking Kuzmenko out 100% for the game against Vancouver. In fact, I might be looking to keep him in against the Canucks, maybe playing his old team and the team that kind of cut bait from him. That could be something to motivate him. If you're asking me, I'd probably keep Kuzmenko in. I have not loved the fourth line. I have not loved Dewar over the last number of games, so maybe you could do that. Defense a little bit more difficult, because I've liked Hanley with Weegar. I thought Weegar struggled in his return to the left side in this game tonight. Made the kind of judgment error on the play that led to the game-winning goal. I thought Weegar struggled relative to the way he plays. I felt like the last 5 games, him playing on the right side was the best hockey we've seen from Weegar this season. So I'm curious what they do on the back end for Tuesday night. This reads, Pat, that 5-on-3 was incredibly hard to watch. Puck movement was so slow that it failed to get the Vegas penalty killers moving, making it much easier for them to defend. On another note, it's becoming frustrating to see Connor Zeri stuck with underwhelming line mates. Sharon Govich looks like he might benefit from sitting out a game or two in Kuzmenko. Kuzmenko seems like he might be better off out of the lineup for the rest of the year. Zeri has the potential to be a game breaker, but without the right support, it's hard for him to produce at the level he's capable of. What's your take on how to maximize Zeri's impact? I think that's a fair point about line mates. I do feel like Zeri has been a bright spot on nights where that line has struggled. They have not really found, since moving Zeri to the middle, have not really found kind of that perfect fit with his line mates. I thought it was a little better once they swapped Kuzmenko for Pelche. Even though I didn't think Kuzmenko was much of an impact maker, thought he had one good shift that I thought was noticeable in this game. But I do think finding the right fit for him is going to be really important. I thought Zeri, Sharangovich, and Pelche, when they were together, I thought they struggled mightily. The problem is Coronado was great again. Mick named him the hardest working Flame, thought that was a great choice. And Coronado has really seemed to find a niche on that line with Backlund and Coleman. And so I don't want to split that up if I'm the Flames as it stands right now, because they're playing so well. And that line was by far Calgary's best line tonight. That line was the only line throughout the entire game that finished in the black. They were 60-11 shot attempts when they were on the ice. It's just under 60% possession. High danger chances were 6-2 when they were on the ice. That was a great line tonight. And obviously they always play the tough opposition. So I just, and I thought Coronado was dynamite again. That's why, so on board with Mick's decision to go with him as the hardest working Flame. Coronado, 9 shot attempts, 5 shots of his 9 attempts, 7 were scoring chances and 4 were at high danger. Thought Coronado was deadly tonight. Unfortunately, Flames don't score a goal. So that would be the only problem with, because I think that there's a lot of people who really want to see Coronado play with Zeri. And I kind of do too, just not right now. But I do think finding Zeri the right line mates is something that, you know, is going to be a work in progress as the year goes along. This reads, I don't believe in moral victories, but that was a moral victory. Jeff in Lethbridge says, Pelche and Coronado were good tonight. So was Vladar. The Flames played a very good road game despite the loss. What else we got here? 960 on the text line. This from our boy Dylan in Revy. Lack of offense is really showing that huge power play at the end of the first and not even one-timer attempt by Sharkey, Sharangovich. That's concerning. I loved how you talked that one caller into a corner yesterday about Wolf being too small. How is that still a narrative? I don't know how the Wolf narrative still exists. I really don't. As for the other part, Sharangovich is still not playing with a ton of confidence. That much is very true. And I think you even saw that on that power play in this game tonight. Usually he is ripping those one-timers, even if they're not perfectly on a tee for him. And he's just not right now. Ash says, felt like a scheduled loss today for me. Also, I've always enjoyed Miramanov's insightful interviews. What are your thoughts on Uyghur's game today? To me, he looked disjointed without Hanley. I don't think it was because it was Hanley leaving. I think that's you play 5 games on your strong side where I believe Uyghur is better, and then you get moved back to your weak side or your off side. I think that, as much as anything, probably had a lot to do with it. And, you know, Hanley's been very predictable. Wes Gilbertson made a really good point on the pregame show about the predictability factor of Hanley. Miramanov plays a more unpredictable game and a less steady game. There's a higher ceiling with Miramanov than Hanley, without question, but Hanley's a steadier and more predictable player. So you combine that with Uyghur being on his strong side. I'm really curious what the Flames end up doing when it comes to their blue line for Tuesday night. This reads from Trent, another disappointing loss for Vladar. Even with a fine showing, he gets no run support. Hard to win when your team gets shut out. Hopefully they crush the Canucks. They need that game. Maybe it's time to move Coronado up to the Kadri line, move Pospisil to the Backlund line. Kadri line would be a good second line, but they need a first line to complement them. Trade up or down, but just make a move sooner rather than later. I don't know. I mean, I'm not breaking up the Kadri line. Didn't think they were as kind of dynamic tonight, but still thought they were pretty dangerous at times. But I agree on the run support for Vladar. This from Biff, who says, Flames goaltending hasn't been the issue this year so far. They're an average team with no elite players. History repeating itself, and it'll end up between 16 and 20 overall position. So the draft should be status quo, and that is you know, that's kind of where things are trending. I grant you that. But there's still lots of time to go. There's still lots of time to play, and we'll see how the rest of the season goes. I get it. There's a lot of people worried the Flames are going to end up in the mushy middle, and they might. But there's still lots of hockey to play, more than half a season to go. This says, just a thought on all the trades Conroy has made. The NHL players coming back have been absolutely horrendous. Do you think his strengths are in draft and development? Your thoughts? I don't know if I agree with that. One guy has kind of not been a hit in Miramanov. Sharon Govich scored 35 goals last year, and Kevin Ball has been one of the best players all season. I don't really know. So, Sharon Govich, who I grant you is struggling this year, but last year scored 35. Kevin Ball's been outstanding and a revelation this year. And Miramanov's kind of been eh. And I thought did have a good game tonight. I don't know if I quite agree with the horrendous label on the players the Flames have brought back. Or Conroy has brought back. This says, Pat, do you think Stamkos could fit a long-term plan and give the young guys a real pro to look up to and grow with guys like Zeri and Coronado? I know the Flames may have tried a few years back. That's from Jesse in Blackie. I don't myself think that there is much of a fit at all for Stamkos on this roster, especially because there's lots of time left on his deal. I don't really. Stamkos is 34. He'll turn 35. In February, like, to me, that makes no sense for the way this Flames team is going. Like, I get what Jesse's saying in terms of kind of the theory behind it, but in terms of the actual fit for the Flames, yeah, I don't really necessarily love that one. Keep the text coming at 960-960 on this Sunday night. Flames lose 3-0 on the road in Vegas. It's Steinberg along with you on your Flames Talk postgame, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. And, of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Phone lines are open too, 403-240-4444. Let's get to the phone lines for the first time tonight. George, you're kicking us off. What's up, George?
Not much, Patty. How are you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm good.
Well, three things, very quick observations. Vegas is a far superior team to the Flames. So that's obviously not news. Two, that has got to be I remember I specifically went to a game in the T-Mobile Arena. That is Calgary. I don't think it's just Calgary, but that is such a hard building to play in. And I think Calgary's success in that building is pretty awful. I think they're like 2-9-2 or something
2-9-2 now after this game. They were 2-8-2 going in. I mean, Vegas is 15-3 now at T-Mobile Arena this year. Like, that's a tough team for everybody to play in that building.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, a lot of before the season started, I spoke to some people that thought Vegas might take a step back this year. I wasn't one of them, and I figured maybe they take a step back next year. And the way it's looking right now, like, I know we have their first-round pick next year. Be prepared for that one to be, if we hold on to it, be prepared for that one to be in the high 20s or 30s, because I don't see this team taking a step back anytime soon. They just continually find a way to revamp, reinvent, and stay competitive. It's actually quite impressive for a team that didn't even exist about 8 years ago. So it's
they're the only team that has bucked the trend of needing to draft the superstar players, right? Like, they really haven't drafted superstar players. All their best players they've either signed or acquired, right? Like, Jack Eichel, trade. Mark Stone, trade. A lot of guys they took in the expansion draft. Not a lot. I mean, some of the guys they took in the expansion draft. Tomas Hertl, trade. Shea Theodore, that was expansion draft. Noah Hanifin, trade. Alex Petrangelo, free agency. They really have not developed their team the way that most teams do. And part of that is because they were an expansion team and had so much success to begin with, but they're kind of the exception to every rule.
Absolutely. And even the people they did draft, like, in the first round, all traded away, pretty much all gone. And none of them, like, I can't off the top of my head, none of them succeeded anywhere else. So management knows what the heck they're doing over there.
Yes.
You know, some people don't like their methods and how heartless they can be, but it's working for them. Bottom line is you watch a player like Jack Eichel like that, right? I understood, second overall pick. And again, as a Flames fan, it's like, oh, we need a guy, we need someone like that. We need to draft someone like that. And, you know, hopefully it will come. But it's, again, another team of the opposition where you watch. And again, like you said, maybe not a good example because they didn't draft Eichel. But, you know, superstars, right? Those players were drafted high, guys like Eichel, et cetera. So, yeah. It's time for me, buddy. It's time for Sharon Kovach to sit. He does not look right at all and is completely ineffective right now. And could it be a health-related thing? I don't know. I think he needs to sit at this point. Like, the two people who I'm actually stunned have not produced to the level I thought they would or even close are Kuzmenko and Sharon Kovach. Crazy to think. Both of them. It's... If they were producing at even 50% more than what they were doing right now, this team would probably have three or four more wins. But it's what it is. But I don't know what's going on with him. I think he needs to sit.
Yeah, I'm. It's a tough one for me because I they don't. The problem is right now they don't have a ton of other options. So if he sits, that means Dewar comes back in. Is Dewar an upgrade on Sharon Govich right now? So that would be one of my questions. And then that also keeps Kuzmenko in. I don't know. It's a tough one for me because I feel you, and maybe you do it for one game to try to get him a little bit of a reset. I just don't know if that's a permanent thing you want to do. And I also think you have to take into account the fact that we are talking about a guy in the final year of a contract with an extension ready to kick in next year that's already signed. And that to me is something that I think also needs to be remembered, right? So I do think you got to be careful with this one, but if it were for one game, I think that you could understand it.
Yeah, I'm talking one game. I'm not talking like for a extended period amount of time like Kuzmenko. Listen, I love Andrei Kuzmenko. I love the human. I love the person, his personality, their skill there. The guy can play the game at a high level offensively, right? He's not the best defensively. He's not the best skater. I don't know what happened to him this year with Calgary. For whatever reason, it's not working at all. And it's trending where it's not going to work. But Kuzmenko earned sitting that many games, right? Like, that was on him. It's not like Calgary's been given opportunities either. Sharon Kovach, for me, would be, like I said, I should have clarified in the beginning. I do it like one game. I wouldn't be sitting right. five straight, you know, because you do make valid points. At the end of the day, is Walker Dewar an upgrade? No, he's not, right? But I don't know. Like, you never know if it will help or not, right? Right now, I don't feel he's helping you at all on the ice. So we'll see about that. And then it's funny. I've been raving about Joel Hanley quite a bit here for the last little while. And all of a sudden he gets sat, and I get it. And I'm not going to like raise hell over it, but it was surprising. And I know you said it and I noticed it too. I felt like Uyghur suffered, not necessarily because I'm saying Hanley makes him better. That's not what I'm saying. It's probably the other way around, but Uyghur all of a sudden going back to the left side. I don't know. I like him a lot better on the right too, Patty. I've really noticed that he just seems better on the right side.
Well, and I think he's one of the few guys that in this league excels playing on his offside. But I don't think, like, remember TJ Brody. TJ Brody was better playing on the right side as a left-handed winger. A left-handed D-man. He was better. He preferred it, and he was better playing on his offside. I think Uyghur can still be a very good, like, very good defenseman playing on his offside. But I don't think he's better. I do think he's better playing as a right D as opposed to a left one. So I'm with you. I think it's ideal for the Flames to have him on the right side. But because the Flames have a unbalanced blue line when it comes to left and right shots, the situation is kind of dictated that they're going to have Uyghur on the left because they have so many more right shots than they have left shots. So we'll see if they go back to Hanley or if they decide to stick with Miramanov. I did think Miramanov played well, so that's going to be really interesting to see too.
Yeah, it will be. And like I said, this team has, you know, a lot of glaring weaknesses. And I think, again, you're not wrong about Uyghur. He can play both sides. I prefer him on the right. And I think when you got a team the way you have it constructed right now, you have to try and maximize everybody's potential, right, and their strengths to the best of your ability as a coach. So that's why I think that. The final one for you here, my friend, I'll let you go. But, again, goaltending, constantly a conversation. I'm just going to say this about goaltending in general, because last call we had people still saying the rubbish about Dustin Wolf. We have people who are like, Dan Vladar should never play a game. Listen, Dan Vladar is just important to Wolf's development as Wolf's play is to his own development. Dan Vladar is the perfect shield, if you will, to Dustin Wolf. There's a reason to. There's a method behind the madness, right? There's a reason why he's getting the games he's getting, the second halves of the back-to-backs. And is it necessarily fair to him? No, probably not. But he is the veteran out of the two goalies. And he's the one that can handle that better while Wolf, you know, because you can't be throwing Wolf to the wolves, pun intended, you know, right away. That's not good for him. You do that to a player like that and he falters, you know, that could, he could take a big confidence hit. And then I don't care whether he's 5'1" or 6'10". It won't matter at that point, right? Because if a goaltender takes a hit like that to the psyche, it's hard to recover from. I think the coaching staff has done a very, very good job of handling the goalies and the way they've been using them. I really do. And had it not been for the goaltending of this team, we would be, I believe it in my heart, we would be a bottom five team. I really do. I think goaltending has been easily our biggest strength and has kept us in a lot of games and even won us some games this season. So for people who are kind of have consternation about the goaltending situation, for me, the proof's in what we've been watching all season to this point. I think they've been doing a great job with it. And I think both I know Wolf's numbers are quite a bit better, but I think Vladar's probably had the tougher competition too, right? So I think both goalies have been doing great. And I give a lot of props to both goalies. And I know being mushy metal sucks. And if they end up that way, that's not going to be great. But give credit to the goalies. They're a big reason why the Flames are still even in a playoff conversation right now.
I agree. We'll talk soon, Georgie. Good to hear from you, pal.
Good to hear from you, my man. We'll probably talk the Vancouver game, my man. I hope you have a wonderful evening.
Okay, man. You too. And if not, Happy New Year. But I'm sure we'll talk on Tuesday night. Georgie always calls in on New Year's Eve. Phone lines are open at 403-240-4444 after a Flames 3-0 loss against the Vegas Golden Knights. Let's say hello to Terry tonight. What's up, Terry?
Hi, Pat, and a belated Merry Christmas to you.
And you.
Hey, two things before I get to the game. Down here in the U.S., there's been some articles posted that viewership for the NHL is way down this year. And just my personal opinion, one of the reasons why is, for example, I have NHL Center Ice, and when I turn on the Flames channel, I always get the broadcast from the other team's network.
I don't, Terry, I don't know what to tell you on that one because I have no idea what their rules are or what the right. I have got no clue, but I believe you.
Yeah, last year I'd get the Flames feed, but now it's always everybody else, so I have to go to ESPN Plus to get the Flames feed. And the regional games are destroying everything. So if your team's playing and you're playing Chicago or St. Louis or teams around here, you don't get the game. It's all blacked out. And so the NHL's got to fix that. That's point number one. Question two is, I understand with the new arena, it's only going to be 18,000. Why 18,000 when the Saddle Dome originally opened? It was 20,226, I believe. So why were we taking 2,000 seats out?
I don't have an answer for you. I honestly don't. Like I'm if Ryan Pike were here, he probably would have an answer, but I got nothing for you.
Okay, now to the game. We got the busy stuff out of the way. One thing I noticed on the power play, and every power play they were doing this, when they were bringing the puck up the ice, they'd always go to the right or left side, and they get stopped up against the boards. Boy, if I'm playing defense, great. All I have to do is force you to the boards. You're not going anywhere. they got to do something different so that they're not pushed against the boards all the time, and then we waste how much, 15, 20 seconds with possession. Secondly, they're moving the puck too slow.
Terry, the power play's been pretty good this year.
And where are they sitting?
On their power play?
Yeah, what, 19th or 20th?
That's a good question. They entered tonight 15th.
Okay, 15th, and they'll just drop some more because of 0-4.
They did go 0-4 tonight. I thought they had some dangerous looks at times. I didn't think the power play was poor tonight, and it is a significant improvement from where it was last year. So
29th, I believe.
Yeah, I'm not as down on the power play as you are, my friend.
No, but if they move the puck faster, look at that 5-on-3. That was terrible.
No, I didn't see it that way. I thought the power of the 5-on-3 was, again, that's just different opinions, but I thought the 5-on-3 was decently dangerous for them.
And so one suggestion to help maybe improve the power play is let Tyson Barrie play. He can get the puck through from the point.
Yeah, if the power play was really struggling, then maybe I would be a little bit more on board with bringing in a power play specialist like Barrie, but it's not struggling enough. Like Barrie's a pretty, I don't want to say one-dimensional, but he's kind of like, at this point, the biggest area that he helps you with is on the power play. And I don't think the power play is struggling enough to bring in a guy who's going to play his offside and, you know, have to be sheltered a little bit at 5-on-5. Like, I still don't mind the Barrie signing, but I don't know if there's a big urgency in my eyes to, like, you got to get him in because the power play is struggling.
Well, that was just an idea I had. Doesn't mean anything. I'm not the coach, but...
I just because we disagree doesn't mean you're wrong.
No. I don't think that at all. We disagree. That's fine. They already talked about the two passengers, Sarangovich and Kuzmenko.
Yeah.
But there's some other passengers though too. And this is going to sound terrible, but when was the last time that Kadri scored?
I mean, Kadri had 3 points yesterday, man. I don't like Kadri's on quite a roll. I don't think that he is one of your passengers.
He may have got 3 assists, but it's
come on, Terry. Come on, like
Huberdeau's the one that's putting the puck in the net.
Yeah, but Kadri's been a big part of that, and Kadri was their best player last night.
So there's been others, but they got to find a way. Because it's not going to get any easier. We're going to hit the midway point of the season, what, next week?
Week after next. Week after next.
The week after next, we're going to hit the midway point of the season, and that's the make or break part. Yes, I know there's lots of games, but there's a lot of games against teams that are better than we are. And we got to start winning those games. It's fine to beat San Jose, but that's an expected win because San Jose is lower in the standings than we are. It's like losing to Chicago, losing to Ottawa. Those are games you should never lose.
Well, Ottawa's in a playoff spot right now, so I think they might be out of that conversation. But yeah, and they beat Chicago.
And we lost to Ottawa, didn't we?
Yeah, but Ottawa is not a bad team.
No, not this year. But usually they are. But that's all I have to say. Hopefully they can find a way to generate more offense than they're currently generating and more dangerous shots. We can't keep taking shots where there's nobody in front of the net.
Yeah, I agree with that.
6 feet out and hoping that it's going to go in. I'm not complaining about the goaltending. The goaltending's been great. I agree with the previous caller. The goaltending is what's kept us in games, and good for them. We just need more offense.
I don't know if I don't know if there is a big fix for that though. This is not a team that was ever going to be a high scoring group. Like this is they're going to be in a lot of close games. It's going to be a struggle all year for this team to score. There will be nights where it's not like that, but generally, Terry, I think that this is kind of what they are. They're a low-scoring, grinded-out hockey team, and that's their identity. And I don't really see that changing dramatically. I don't know if there is a real fix for them being a low-scoring team.
No, I don't think you can make one trade and it.
Definitely not via trade. That's for sure.
No, and. We've been a low-scoring team. This is our, second year of being a low-scoring team. We were kind of low-scoring Goodrow's last year, too, but not like this.
Not in Johnny's last year, they were not a low-scoring team. They were a very high-scoring team that year.
All right. I think you got lots of other people, so I'll hang up. See you next time. Happy New Year to you, too.
Be well, Terry. Good to hear from you, pal.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, man. Let's continue along on the phone lines at 403-240-4444. Flames lose 3-0 in Vegas. Got a few lines open if you want to chat on this Sunday night here on our Flames Talk post-game show with Neil up next. What's up, Neil? Neil going once. Neil going twice.
Hello,
Neil.
Hello.
Come on, you know you can't be on mute. You know you can't be on. That might be a 10-game suspension, Neil.
I my apologies.
Just kidding. What's up?
I was doing a hoy hoy the whole time, and I'm like, why is he not answering me? It's because I was on mute, unfortunately.
We're all good. What's up?
Yeah, I actually kind of agree with the previous caller. I think the power play needs a shakeup. I think Tyson Barrie is the answer. And why wait till your team's power play is anemic before making a change? Why not bring in a player that can shake that up?
What's wrong with the power play? Where did they get the game-winning goal from yesterday?
That's fair. But what I'm saying is that in a team that isn't in as in flux as the Flames are, I think a shakeup once in a while and a reason to get a player like that you've signed for, you know. A reason to get him in the lineup.
The problem with Barrie, and I'm not saying that they shouldn't get Tyson Barrie in, because I do think at some point he does need to play. I just don't know if it's to work on strictly to work on the power play right now. And the problem right now with Barrie is that he's a right shot. And their need is on the left side, and he just it has not been a great fit. Him playing with Pahal and the other so where do you bring Barrie in? That here's my question to you, Neil. With the, how do you
spot
playing with who?
With Uyghur.
You want Tyson Barrie in your top four now?
Yeah. So you can use him on the power play, maybe on the road. In the situation where power plays become very important.
But he struggles at 5-on-5. Like he's a third pair 5-on-5 guy. And now you want to play him in the high leverage situations with Uyghur.
But I'm saying, I think that if he was played more often.
But he struggled at 5-on-5 throughout his career. Like defensively, that's always been where Barrie struggles. And I mean, he was a PTO this year.
Fair enough. Yeah,
trying to take a shot at Tyson at all. That's not what I'm trying to do at all. I'm just saying that like to shoehorn him into the lineup on Uyghur's right side, that seems like you're forcing something. And the problem is right now, Bean and Pahal have worked pretty well together. You like Miramanov with Uyghur and you like Hanley with Uyghur. I just don't know what the natural place to get Barrie in is right now.
Okay, so may I pose a different question to you then?
Okay.
How about bringing up who's really shooting it out in the Wranglers right now, currently, as a top pairing defenseman?
They have eight defensemen on the NHL roster already, Neil.
I mean, that's an opportunity for him to sit. He's sitting anyways, right? and there's guys that can have recalls.
But right? So what are you asking? Like to bring in a ninth defenseman on the roster?
What I'm saying is, yes, you said 15th overall, correct?
Yes, with a roster that does not have any superstar players. I think they've been pretty good on the power play.
Right. So, but I think more what I'm talking about is looking towards the future, right? So either you put the guy in, that was the reason they signed him, I'm assuming, is to play power play minutes, right? Or give another guy a chance. That's kind of all I'm saying.
I don't quite get this push. Yeah, they went 0-for-4 on the power play tonight, but like, why this push to completely change? Now you want to call and bring in a ninth defenseman on this roster? Like, I'm having, and maybe this is just me being thick, Neil, but I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around why there's like your call is focused on making big changes.
When you pinpoint the fact that I'm saying bring in a ninth defenseman, it actually does make it sound ludicrous. So I kind of get what you're saying.
I don't know about that. I'm not quite sure why it's such a big thing right now, you know?
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. But I did understand what Terry was saying. Just more I'm saying, like, you know, we have options. Use them. Maybe.
I guess I'm not as down. Ever since they've changed up the units, the power play has been pretty decent. So I'm not, like, I don't see this massive need. Yeah, they went 0-for-4 tonight in a 3-0 loss, but like, I don't feel like there's this massive urgent need for them to go and make wholesale changes to their power play units.
Yeah, and I gotta say, Dan Vladar is really getting the like bad end of the stick here. Eh? Like, he seems to be jumping into games and being part of the situations, and it's making his goals against average look worse maybe than it should be. Even though he's really actually playing very well. And if people around the league aren't really watching Dan Vladar play, they might think, hey, you know, he's a sub 900 goaltender.
I will say this, you know, like, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying on that, Neil. And I think there's some validity to it in that he has gotten the far more difficult situations and has not gotten the same type of run support that Wolf has, all those types of things. But at the same time, in this league, at this stage of the game, teams aren't going to be making moves for a goaltender based just on, you know, the raw stat of goals against average or save percentage. Like, the position has evolved so much, and the way that NHL teams look at the position has changed so much that, you know, you've got entire goaltending departments that have stats that we're not privy to. And those are the things that they would be looking at when it comes to making a potential trade for a guy like Vladar. So I don't think you have to worry about that too much.
Do you think there's still eyes on him?
Yes. I don't know where the natural fit would be, especially with Colorado making their wholesale changes already. But yeah, I still think there are people know he's an unrestricted free agent. Teams know that he's in the final year of a deal. Teams also know that he's played pretty well this year, even if the raw stats don't necessarily show it 100%.
So, and this will be my last thing. I just want to say, Merry New Year to everybody. But when it comes down to Flames goaltending defense, if you were to make a bold prediction,
okay,
would you think a goaltender is more likely to be moved or a defenseman is more likely to be moved by the trade deadline?
I would say that's a good question. Because the more I think about it, I'm like, I would say, man, it's close. It's close, yeah, for me.
I agree.
I think I would go defense only because goaltending moves are less Like they happen less often, right? Yeah, less frequent.
Less frequent.
So yeah, I guess I would say, as I think about it in my head, I would probably say more likely to make a move like a Hanley or a Barry or something like that. More likely to make a move on defense.
Okay. Thank you very much, Pat.
All right, Neil. Be well, buddy. Good to hear from you.
Happy New Year to everybody out there, man.
Happy New Year, pal. Good to hear from you, Neil. 403-240-4444 is your phone number. Flames take a 3-0 loss or fall 3-0 on the road in Vegas this evening. A couple phone lines open if you want to chat on our Flames Talk post-game show this evening with Adam up next. What's up, Adam?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Awesome, awesome. Well, I just sort of want to chime in. I don't have anything specific I really want to talk about, but I guess maybe I do.
Okay.
I just hear a lot of callers that I think that Kadri gets a bit of an unfair ride. I can't imagine where the team would be, especially our young guys, without him. I think he adds an element of, I guess he's got that veteran presence, but he also, I think he's a winner. And I think that that translates into Zeri and Pospisil and even Huberto upping their game, because I don't think he accepts, a subpar effort. I know he makes his mistakes, but I think the value of having him in the lineup and him as our premier player right now, I think that's why the Flames are in the conversation for a playoff spot.
I'm with you 100% on the Kadri front. I think that he does get too rough a ride sometimes. I think there are some criticisms made of him that I think are unfair, that don't necessarily get made of other players. I think part of that is, I mean, there's a lot of different reasons for it. I think, you know, the reputation is part of it. I think the fact that he plays there's kind of a brashness to his game, you know what I'm saying? And I think that's part of what goes along with it.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, I can't sit here and I don't want to accuse anybody of anything, but I don't think we can discount the fact that there at times is probably and I don't want to say, like, I don't know who this would be, but you can't sit here and tell me that there's not a racial element that goes along with it as well. And again, if you're a critic of Kadri, I'm not saying that that's why you're a critic of Kadri, but yeah. I think more in the larger picture, you can't sit here and tell me that there's not a little bit of that going on at times too.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's sort of the sentiment that I have. And, you know, which is unfortunate, but I also look at his game. Maybe I'm sort of taking a specific look at him, but if you take a look at from when he started off in the league, he's always been buried. I mean, you know, he was buried in the minors longer than he should have been. And then eventually he surfaced up with the Leafs. And he was somewhat buried in that lineup as well until he was moved to Colorado. I think that's where he started to surface. And it was only because of injuries as well in Colorado that he got the spotlight when MacKinnon was injured. And he stepped up, you know, so I think he's one of those players that I think that sort of fits the mold of where Calgary's at, where he's now given opportunity to be at the forefront of an organization that's sort of evolving. So, you know, I think, you know, it's almost like the misfits that they had in Vegas, whatever they called them. I think we have a number of those guys here that have a point to prove, and I think he's still one of them. I don't see him wanting to leave, because I don't think at any point in his career he's had the opportunity to, you know, to be the guy or to be at the forefront of, you know, a changing culture. So I don't know, just my thoughts on that. As far as one of the phone calls go in terms of the defense corps, I look at Calgary's defense corps. I'm overly impressed with it. I think, me personally, maybe I'm a bit of a homer on this, I think top five defense corps in the league. I don't see many teams that have a better defense corps than we do. We're missing that one spot, I think, where they have Hanley coming in and Miramanov, that maybe is a bit of a sore spot. I wouldn't mind seeing Fajal moved up into a top four. I think he's earned it. I think he's been one of their better defensemen the whole season. Thoroughly impressed with what he brings in terms of his compete level, and I haven't really seen him have a bad game. I don't know what your thoughts on Fajal are as a possibility for a top four spot.
I think Okay, so there's a few things there. I don't know if I would go as far myself to say, you know, top four or top five D core in the league. I think that might be a little much in my eyes, but I do think that this group, I will say, and I will, you know, where I do think, in my opinion anyway, that you're onto something is like this group has really excelled more than a lot of people were expecting them to, and I think has exceeded a lot of expectations in that regard. And I think the D core deserves a lot of credit for that. So I think they've done well in kind of elevating and a lot of guys playing a little bit more and in higher and larger situations than they ever have before. So that would be number one on the D core. And they also, don't forget, have a pretty deep D core. Not deep necessarily NHL wise, but they have a very deep organizational. Like they've added a lot of players to this blue line in the organization, and that also I think is really important when talking about this going forward. Like when you think about Perek and Brustevich and Grishnikov and maybe Poirier you can throw in there and others, they've done a nice job of turning that into an organizational strength, which I think is important to point out too. So as for Pahal, I like Pahal a lot. I think that was a great re-signing, and I'm really happy that he got the opportunity to get that, to get the opportunity to get the extension. I really am happy to see that. I do think he's best suited, though, in that role as the number three right side D. So I don't know if an elevation for Pahal makes a ton of sense. I think he's so well suited where he is right now.
Yeah. Thoughts on this? I just have one other thought that I want to share with you. This is what I'm thinking. I mean, you're going to have, you know, Kuzmenko's going to be off the books by the end of the year. So that's what, $5.5 million?
Yes.
Okay. So we're looking at, and correct me if I'm wrong here because my numbers could be off, we're looking at about $25 million in cap space next year.
That sounds about right.
Okay. That is a pretty darn good position to be in, considering they're a bubble playoff team right now. And I actually predicted they would make the playoffs before the season began, just because I think the goaltending is there. And I like the character of the team. But anyhow, moving forward to that, I could be wrong here, but I think that there's a bit of a buy-in by the veterans of that leadership group. And again, I could be wrong here, help me out here, is there's a possibility with that $25 million in cap space, I think they can have their cake and eat it too. And let me explain this for a sec.
Okay.
That they could potentially, a team that's pushing for a cup run and they have a poor contract, that Connolly could take a poor contract so they can go out and get a better fit for their team, possibly. So that would give us some draft capital. Okay, and you never know that, you know, if we slide into a playoff position, great. And if not, I think the bigger picture, especially for the leadership group, is next year, what they're going to do with that, with that cap space. Because we could get draft picks based on the cap space that we have, and then we could go out next year and potentially, and I'm throwing this out there, not saying it's going to happen, wishful thinking, I would love to see Marner in a Flames uniform. I think that would shift the foundation of our club.
I don't hate the idea. I don't, and this is just, you know, knowing the Flames are going to have a ton of cap space. I don't think if Marner doesn't return to Toronto, I've heard that Marner is not super keen on signing in Canada again.
Okay.
So that is one thing that I've heard. And things change, and that doesn't mean that is ironclad, but I have heard that, and I get it. I mean, you've played in that market for as long as you have. I can get if you aren't going to stay there, I can understand maybe wanting a little bit of a different situation to be a part of.
Okay.
I think more realistic would be a guy like Sam Bennett, maybe, wanted to, and I think that, you know, there'd be a lot of, there'd definitely be a lot of, what I'm trying to think of the right word, A lot of nostalgia bringing Bennett back, but he's also turned into a pretty good center in this league. So I could see them maybe targeting a guy like Bennett if they were really looking to bring in a center. If they, you know, don't necessarily find a center elsewhere, I could see Bennett being a guy they look at. And wishful thinking would be Rantanen, because I don't think Rantanen is going to make it to free agency, but he would be wishful thinking in this conversation. I also think Bennett is a little wishful thinking because I'm not sure he's going to make it. But if he does become an unrestricted free agent, I know Francis wrote about this. I could see the Flames making a run at Sam Bennett and trying to see if he could be. I've thought about it a little bit, and you know, they are a team that needs some center ice help.
Okay.
So those would be a few of the guys that you could look at anyway.
Do you think Bennett would want to come back here? Like, I mean, money talks, but do you think he'd want to come back to a place that, you know, I'm a huge Bennett fan. Like, I mean, I would love to see him in a Flames uniform again. But I just wonder if he, you know, at this point in his career, if he'd come back and...
I don't think it's out of the question. And I think because Lomberg coming back to Calgary, I think that goes a long way. So if there is interest in Bennett from the Flames, and if he does again, if he gets to unrestricted free agency, which I'm not convinced he will, I think that there would be a chance he'd be interested, a decent chance he'd be interested in coming back.
And the only reason why I bring up Marner as a possibility is because I know that him and Nazem Kadri have a pretty strong connection, and I'm just wondering if that might be an influence. I mean, it's probably a far stretch, but I'm wondering if that conversation, like, I don't know, players tend to influence each other to a certain extent. But anyhow, that's just me wishful thinking. I would love to see that type of skill set. I mean, we lost Gaudreau, and we know that type of player can really shift the thinking, especially the offensive instincts of a club. Completely shift when you have a player.
I don't hate the idea in theory at all. We got to wrap up here, Adam. Good stuff. I appreciate the call. It's
no
just
worries.
That I'm skeptical that Marner would be interested. That's the only thing.
Yeah, fair enough. Thanks for taking my call, and happy new year. If I don't get a chance to talk to you, take care.
Hey, good stuff, Adam. Really appreciate the call, man. And you know, a lot of Calgary's free agency approach, I also think, comes down to the way this season goes, and kind of how some of the young players continue to evolve a little bit. I personally have done a little when I first had heard the Sam Bennett name thrown out there. Again, I'm not convinced he's going to get the free agency, but I've done a little bit of an about face in my opinion on that one. I wonder, because center ice is such an issue, if that might be an area that could be interesting because the cap's going up. And I don't know, like, yeah, Bennett will have to be paid, but I think he's the type of player that they're looking for. And obviously fits the need of the position for sure. So anyway, that's something to keep an eye on going forward. One more call before we go back inside the Flames locker room. The phone lines are open at 403-240-4444. It's Steinberg along with you on your Flames Talk post-game show this evening. And we say hello to Anand. What's going on, Anand? Friends, we need to not keep ourselves on mute. There we go. Anand, what's going on?
Good evening, Patty. I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah, it was a tough game tonight, definitely. But I think the Flames played great most of the first 20 or 40 minutes or so. You would agree with me, correct?
They fought hard. I still thought that Vegas was clearly the better team for a good chunk of the first 40 minutes. But they definitely didn't skirt it from an effort standpoint, that's for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And then Dan Vladar, I know he got a break in between of games as well, but him coming out of the gates tonight, he looked really well. A couple questions for you. What did you think of Kuzmenko tonight? I think he was once again invisible tonight, but I know he had one decent shift, but otherwise not as impactful as always so far.
Yeah, I didn't see a ton from Kuzmenko tonight, that's for sure. I thought he was... I'd actually think about keeping him in the lineup just because, only because they're playing Vancouver, and you do need to, you do still, you can't just abandon Kuzmenko. Like, you still need to see if he can, you still need to see if he can find his game again. But you also need to be cognizant of the fact you need to ice your best lineup. So I actually would keep Kuzmenko in and give him one more game because it's Vancouver on Tuesday. But definitely, like, we are talking about a guy who is running out of opportunities to really prove that he's a everyday guy in this lineup for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And then secondly, I think throughout the game, I think I started noticing prominently the second period. So they changed the lineups a bit. So with Sharangovich, Zari, and Kuzmenko together, then they dropped Pelche down to the fourth line. Did you like that look, or how they started at the game overall?
I actually thought it worked from the standpoint that I thought that it kick-started the fourth line, which has been pretty pedestrian of late. I thought getting Pelche back on there actually helped quite a bit. So that was good to see. I thought Pelche had a pretty good game tonight.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, although he was not on the score sheet, yeah, definitely he had a good game. And the final question for your defense pairing, I was shocked to see that Miramanov came in tonight. Like, I didn't know they would change the defensive pairing, but what did you think of Miramanov tonight?
I actually thought he played pretty well. I get why they did it. I still think you got to keep in mind how good Hanley and Uyghur have played together. I wouldn't have made the change tonight myself, but I would have kept Hanley and Uyghur together if I were making the calls. Lord knows I don't, and that's good for everybody who cheers for the Flames. But I would have probably kept Hanley and Uyghur together for another game, but they do need to get Miramanov playing. They do need to see if they can get a little bit more out of him and see if he can get to a level where they obviously had high hopes for him when they acquired him from Vegas. And so, you know, you do have to get him playing at some point. So I understood it from that standpoint. I also understood second half of a back-to-back is when a lot of times you'll want to make a lineup change just for energy reasons and see if you can get a little bit of a boost with some tired legs. So I get it. I thought all that being said, even though I wouldn't personally, like, I wasn't like, yeah, get Miramanov back in for this game, I thought he played pretty well against his former team. So credit to him on that respect.
Gotcha. Yeah, fair enough. And final question for you, goaltending wise, do you see Dan Vladar, or does Wolf? I know Dan Vladar played amazing tonight, but again, New Year's Eve ending, you want to end the year on a good note. What do you think, Dustin Wolf or Dan Vladar for Tuesday?
I think you go Wolf. I mean, they've alternated for the most part throughout the year. They, you know, Vladar didn't win tonight. That's not saying he was the reason why. He played really well. But, I would go back to Wolf if it were me. And that's my guess as to what they'll do.
All right, sounds good. All right, thanks so much, Brett. Have a good night, and talk to you on Tuesday.
Okay, good to hear from you, Anand, as always.
Yeah, good to hear from you too.
Okay, we'll talk soon, bud. Phone lines are open, 403-240-4444. Text lines wide open as well. Keep the text coming at 960-960 on this Sunday night as the Flames fall 3-0 on the road in Vegas this evening. Let's go back inside the Flames locker room. We've heard from head coach Ryan Huska. Now let's hear from defenseman Mackenzie Uyghur. His thoughts post-game tonight after a loss in Vegas.
Mackenzie, maybe just take us through tonight's game and where you think you guys fell short.
I think maybe just the patience. We knew that they were a structured team. They play the right way all night, and they waited for their opportunity there at the end of the second. And it was a good game. I thought both teams competed hard. Vladdy obviously was our best competitor tonight. He played a great game, but just patience. It was two teams that played structure, and I thought they ended up with a little bit more patience there to get that one goal. And then obviously another, you know, you give them four or five power plays, they got a good power play over there. So they made the most of that one too.
You guys had 31 shots, but do you feel like you maybe needed to create some more havoc or rebounds or kind of action in front to make it tougher for the goaltender?
Yeah, a little bit. That's something we got to continue to work on, is bearing down on our opportunities, mucking up in front of the net. I thought that's another thing that they do well, is fronting shots pretty well. I thought the D, including myself, we had opportunities to get the puck through and didn't. Yeah, I think for the most part, we give it our all, but we just kind of fall short finding that one to get us in the game.
A power play. It seemed like you had some good looks. What did you think?
Yeah. I thought it was, you know, we had some good looks, and then there were times where it kind of, we lacked some momentum for our team. The 5-on-3 was crucial, I thought, for our team, especially on a back-to-back. It's opportunities like that that you want to capitalize on. You know, but we continue to work on the power play as well. And, you know, that's just obviously when you look back on that game, those are some key moments that you fall on.
How quickly did you turn the page now, knowing you're right back to work at home on Tuesday night?
Yeah, very quick. Listen, it was a back-to-back after the break. I don't like to give excuses or whatnot. The schedule is a little bit against us a little bit, but we forget about it. We got another big game here coming up, a couple big games at home, and we play well at home. And then we go on a nice mom trip. So there's lots to look forward to here for our group, and we're right in the mix. So, you know, forget about it right now.
There you go. Mackenzie Weegar, post-game tonight from Vegas. Flames lose 3-0 to the Golden Knights on this Sunday. Tonight's game has been brought to you by South Point Toyota. More inside the Flames locker room, more of your phone calls. It is last call for phone calls. If you want to chime in, now's the time to do so. 403-240-4444. Give us a call if you want to chat tonight or fire us a text. Text line remains open. Keep those texts coming at 960-960. Tonight's game brought to you by South Point Toyota, as I mentioned, and our Flames Talk post-game show continues next. This is Calgary Flames Hockey on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Flames Talk post-game show continues on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Final score, Flames fall 3-0 to Vegas on this Sunday night. It's Steinberg along with you as we continue along on your Flames Talk post-game, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, wherever you get your podcasts. Hopefully you're having yourself a wonderful Sunday if you're listening on a Sunday. Hey, Flames fought hard, but going up against one of the best teams in the NHL, second half of back-to-back, best home team in the NHL, this is going to be a tough one, no doubt about it. Okay, last call for phone calls. If you want to jump in, now's the time to do so. 403-240-4444, or keep getting your texts in as well. 960-960. One more trip inside the Flames locker room. Let's check in with Connor Zeri. His thoughts post-game from Vegas.
Does Connor just take us through this one and where you feel like you guys fell short tonight?
Yeah, I think it was a good effort by us. Obviously, a tough kind of schedule there with two games so tight together. But I think at the end of the day, there's little details, little things that weren't fully perfect that ended up costing us. And obviously, when we get opportunities on the man advantage, especially a 5-on-3, it's you got to bear down, you got to bury some goals. And I think the old stats, your success rate goes way down after you have a 5-on-3 for a certain amount of time. You don't score on it. So I think just little things like that and little details throughout the game that we got to clean up, but overall it was a good effort.
Did you think you generated enough dangerous chances as an offense?
No, I don't think so. I think we could have done a better job. I think obviously we didn't score a goal, right? So obviously we didn't do enough, and I think it's a little extra here and there and a little more generating, a little more getting to the net and just bearing down.
You guys go right back to work, right? You talk about a busy schedule. You're right back at it on Tuesday. How quickly do you kind of erase this one from the memory and get prepared for a homestand here?
Yeah, you got to think about it a bit. I think you got to watch and you got to learn from the mistakes and take those little details and move on to the next day. But once it gets past 24 hours, you kind of got to flush and move on. That's the beauty of this league is you have a tough one, you get to go right back at it and play again. So I think we're all looking forward to Tuesday.
There you go. Connor Zeri, post-game from Vegas is... You know, I thought he was dangerous again. I do think that finding him the right line mates is going to be an interesting project for the rest of the season. Obviously, face-off work needs to get better tonight. Not bad, 4-5 at 44%. Michael Backlund led the way in the face-off dot tonight, 10-6 at 63%. He's really, really started to be a big-time contributor in that area as well. Okay, back to the text line we go before our last couple of calls. This reads, Pat, last year Coleman scores 30. Even the year before that, Backlund was scoring a lot. Last year, Yegor had 35. They have players that can score, but too many inconsistent players. I think that for Coleman, the expectation of him scoring 30 on a regular basis probably isn't fair. Last year was a career year for Blake Coleman. He had a great year and he's had a good year this year too, but scoring 30 on a regular basis probably isn't what we're going to see from Coleman. Sharon Govich is struggling, though, and they need him to get back to the 35-goal guy he was last year. And he's probably not going to score 35 this year. Will he get to 20? I don't know. But we know that this guy is capable of playing significantly better than what he's done this year. And so maybe he finds it this year, maybe he doesn't. But last year was a really good year for Sharon Govich. This year has been a frustrating one. And so now he needs to show us that, because remember the 1 year in Vegas, he had a 20-plus goal season, was really good. Then the second year, he was getting healthy scratched in the playoffs. Sharon Govich needs to show us that he is a consistent goal scorer in this league and a consistent offensive threat in this league. And I thought he was on his way. I really did. I thought he was very much on his way from figuring it out last year. And it's regressed this year, and there are some factors as to why that may have happened, but Sharon Govich needs to find some consistency. There's no doubt about it. This reads, I don't understand. This is from Theo, by the way. I don't understand why people want to change the power play. I think it's been the best positive this season other than the goaltending. Got Coronado and Zeri playing big roles on it. What more do you want? Yeah, I've been a little confused as to why so many people are pounding a couple people on the phone line saying they got to change the power play. I don't quite understand that one. This from Isabel, who says, while watching The Chase, which, by the way, outstanding work from Ryan Dietrich and Brendan Parker and everybody involved in The Chase over at CalgaryFlames.com and the digital department. But Isabel says, while watching The Chase, coaches are rattling off technical instructions very fast. A lot of it is incomprehensible at the pace presented for a layman, let alone someone learning the language. Was wondering if Kuzmenko and Sharon Govich are at a disadvantage in feeling outside the circle due to the language barrier causing some performance insecurities. Look forward to both resuming their scoring touch. I don't, and I'm not suggesting that that's that it's ludicrous or anything like that, Isabel, at all. I don't think so. I don't think, because, you know, Kuzmenko scored 39 2 years ago, and he did the, like, same situation. Sharon Govich scored 35 last year, same situation where there was a language barrier. But I do think, first of all, I've talked to a few coaches about this. I mean, they also are very, they check in to make sure that after what you see on The Chase, for instance, there's still one-on-one stuff to make sure that there is an understanding. You've got guys like Miramanov and Kuzmenko and Sharon Govich and guys in that locker room who do speak the same language as they all speak Russian. So, you know, I don't think that is a reason why we're seeing both guys struggle. I think it's a fair question, but I don't think it is the reason why we're seeing them struggle right now. This reads from Will in BC. I like the effort tonight, especially on a back-to-back. Just one question. Almost halfway through the season, and the Flames still have two 1B goalies. Do you see the Flames at any point this season deciding on a 1A and a 1B, or is this the plan the rest of the way? I think if we move into the final kind of third of the season and the Flames are very much like fighting tooth and nail for a playoff spot, I could see Ryan Huska then maybe tilting the needle a little bit towards one guy. And I think that guy would be Wolf if it were to happen. But I think that this being a fairly even split is something we're going to see for the majority of the season, because both guys, I do believe, need to play. Dustin Wolf is the priority organizationally, and I think part of the reason why he's having so much success is because Dan Vladar is here and because Vladar is taking on more difficult matchups and Vladar is taking on second halves of back-to-backs, and Vladar is playing too, so you're not overworking Wolf. So I keep on saying this, and you may not agree, and that's fine, but I keep on saying this, and I really do believe it. the tandem is a big reason why the goaltending has been a success. The tandem is a reason why Wolf has had so much success this year. And I think this is going to be the status quo for the next little while. Maybe if we're into post Four Nations, into the real post trade deadline, into the real nitty gritty of a playoff race, then I could see them, if Dustin Wolf remains the guy who's been the better of the two, then I could see them maybe making a slight shift in that regard. This reads, how about Bennett in the middle of Zeri and Coronado? Yeah, that would be a nice looking, that'd be a nice look. And then don't forget about Bennett and Huberdeau as a potential. Now, again, do I think Bennett's going to hit free agency? My gut says no. I sure as hell don't think they're going to trade him, even if they don't have a contract set. So I would say like 0% chance Florida trades Bennett, at least this season. Maybe they could trade his rights, but like actually trading him with playing time left on his deal. No, I think like 0.0% chance that happens. Him making it to free agency, I still would put under 50%, but far greater chance of that happening. And then if he makes it to free agency, I do think the Flames will be interested in him. I really do. But again, I don't know if he's going to get there. That's all. Great stuff so far at 960-960. Appreciate it. As always, thank you so much for all of the input on the text line. We got time for a couple more phone lines, phone calls this evening on the phone lines. Let's say hello to Parsons. What's going on, Parsons?
Hey, sir. How are you doing?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. I forgot to bring this up on our last call, but I'm very impressed with Huberdeau because there was an interview where he said that he figured he was the best version of himself, and which is an interesting comment. And I think I agree with him, and I'm very, very impressed with him this year so far. I mean, yeah, there's the giveaways here and there still, but at the end of the day, wouldn't you grade this as a massive improvement on, you know, since his tenure?
Oh, this is the best he's ever played as a member of the Flames. Whether or not this is the best version he's ever been, I don't know. Like, he did have 115 points with Florida. That's a pretty high bar. However, he believes it. Like, and I was the one, I asked him that question. I was not expecting him to say that, but then I was also expecting him maybe to like clarify or say like, yeah, best version defense, but no, he didn't. And I think he truly does believe that this is the best version of an all-round player he's ever been. And you know, maybe he is. And I'm not saying that he's not. I just, you know, he definitely has committed himself to being much better away from the puck. He's committed himself to playing a different type of hockey offensively, which I think has really helped. And you combine those things, and all of a sudden, he's producing at a higher level than he ever has as a member of the Flames. I think after tonight, it is, 15 points in his last 13 games? I think that's right. He's been a really nice story the last month or so, and now the challenge is to keep it going. But he definitely, like the Sportsnet showed the graphic today of where all his goals have been scored, all right there, right around the crease. Of his team leading 15, he is playing a more hard-nosed type of hockey. He has been better defensively. Like, he's never going to be a sulky guy, but he has been better, and you can tell that he really has committed himself to his work away from the puck, and it's been paying off for him. And I'm with you. I give him a lot of credit. And if this is the best version of Jonathan Huberdeau in his mind, then the most important part for me is that he believes it.
Well, not just that, but here's another important part is he's never dodged the media or anything. He's always kind of taken, you know, He always takes interviews. He always does stuff like that. Like, he's never dodged it. Like, and you got to give the guy a lot of credit for this. Like, this has been a rough go for him. And I've given him, you know, I've given him grief too. Like, you know, I've called him before saying, oh my God, like, what's going on? But, you know, you got to give it to the guy for sticking to it and not dodging anyone and sticking to his laurels and, you know, working hard, you know.
And I agree with you. I agree with you on the front of, like, he's always been very accountable and he's always been there to face the music.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a good trait.
Oh, I think it's an excellent trait. Can I ask you a question? There's been some weird rumors going around, and this is just speculative, but the whole Bennett thing, what's your take on that? Like, do you think it would even be worth it?
In what sense?
In the sense of his age range.
I think it's a fair question, and he doesn't necessarily fit the age range, but I do think he fits where fits Huberto for sure. And that I don't think can be understated or overstated rather. But I also think that he kind of with the timeline they're looking at, like, they do want to take a step and be more competitive next year and be more competitive the year after. If I don't believe in trading for players of that age range, but if a guy fits and he's a little bit older, like what Bennett's 28, 29, if it's going to be a free agent signing, I'm a little less against it. And I do think you could make the argument and I think it's a pretty good argument that he would fit what they're looking for. He can play down the middle. He's turned into a pretty good NHL center. So I don't dislike that one. If there was a power ranking of guys that I think could realistically become available, Rantanen would be one, Bennett would be two.
And the reason why it interests me, you know, it wasn't on my top of the bucket list, but the reason why it interests me is just reuniting him with Huberto.
Yeah, for sure. I think that is a big part of it.
You know, like, that's a huge part of it. So I'm very interested to see how that plays out.
Again, I really think there's zero chance Florida trades Bennett, but he is a pending unrestricted free agent. So it would be a guy that comes available in the summer. I still think I would put better odds at him re-signing in Florida than not. But if he doesn't re-sign in Florida, then yeah, I think the Flames will take a run at him.
What do you think about Kulich? And one of the guys I have my eye on is in Buffalo, Kulich. Do you know a lot about this guy?
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and be able to give you a massive scouting report on him.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think like where he would fit. Like, so
he's a winger.
Yeah, I know what we're talking about. I'm just trying to think, like, where would be the best fit for another left shot guy? I know that Sam Bennett isn't a right shot either. Like, I am aware of that, but he plays center, and I know that Kulich is listed as a center. Now, I can't sit here and tell you that I know off the top of my head Jiří Kulich's contract situation. So would he be trade bait or would he be free agent? Yeah, he's still really young. So like he would have to be trade bait.
Control, so.
Yeah, so he had to be part of a trade.
No. Yeah, he'd have to be part of a trade for sure.
So that's why I was a little confused and caught off guard. Right. We're talking about Bennett and then we're talking about a 20-year-old on the other end.
I got
very, very confused there. So yeah, Kulich is still under team control from the Sabres for a while. Like he's a 20, like he'd have to be a guy as part of a big trade, you'd think.
Yeah, I think he's got one more year under his entry, but if I'm not mistaken, but he's an interesting prospect. Like if we're doing this thing, like if we're trading veterans for, you know, like prospects or, you know, early 20s guys, I think he would be.
I don't mind that. Like, I don't mind that idea.
I totally love it. Yeah. He would be a guy I would like to target.
Now, I do wonder a little bit more about, like, first of all, who knows what Buffalo is going to do? But Kulich is a center. So I like that. Yeah, and the more that we talk it out, he's playing center in Buffalo. And has played center in Buffalo at times this year. The more we talk it out, I kind of go back on my left shot thing. I mean, yes, they need more right shot guys, but center Iceman, you're still okay with if they do they need right shot centers? Yes, no doubt. That remains the number one priority. But if you can bring in a young center, even if he's a left shot, I still think you're okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I still like of Buffalo's guys, Dylan Cousins is the guy that is most interesting to me.
You're still on the Cousins thing, eh?
I don't know if he's going to get moved, but if he does end up on the block, I think he'd be a great fit for the Flames. I think he'd be a better fit than Kulich because he's a right shot.
Okay. Fair enough, brother. I think that's it, man. I thought Vladar had a good game tonight, by the way. And, I think that's about it, my friend.
Well, I was you had my head going in circles there for a little bit, but I'm glad I got it on the rails for us, and we could have a good conversation about it.
You're a smart guy. I don't put that past you.
Good stuff, Parse. We'll talk to you soon, and if we don't talk to you on New Year's, have a happy New Year, pal.
You too, sir.
Thanks, man. And that'll wrap us up on the phone lines this evening. I like when he said Kulich, I was like, who are we talking about? Because I was thinking, because I know a couple people with the last name, but it's spelt differently. So I'm like, is there a K-U-L-Y-C-H in the list? So I'm like, I don't even know who that. Then I'm like, oh, Buffalo, Yuri Kulich. That's right. I don't know. I don't know if Buffalo trades that guy. I think he'd be a fine fit for the Flames. And if there's a bigger deal that ends up happening, maybe he could be a guy the Flames target. But I definitely still think Cousins is the guy I like the most out of Vegas right now. Out of Buffalo right now. Again, I have no idea if the Sabres are going to be making big roster moves and big transactions, but if the Flames could get their hands on Dylan Cousins, I still think that guy fits the Flames exactly and what they're trying to do. But I also know that prices for these guys are through the roof right now, Cousins included. Final score, 3-0. Flames lose in Vegas. Thanks for all your phone calls. Thanks for all your texts tonight. And it is time for tonight's final summary from Vegas. No scoring in the first period. What would turn out to be the eventual game-winning goal was scored almost 36 minutes into this hockey game. Brett Howden redirects home the 1-0 goal at 15:59 of the second period. Howden's 15th from Alex Pietrangelo, and Tanner Pearson gave Vegas a 1-0 lead after 40. They would hold that 1-0 lead for the vast majority of the third period until they finally get a little breathing room at 14:41 on the power play. Victor Olofsson scores his 8th from Shea Theodore and Jack Eichel to make it 2-0, and then Tanner Pearson ices it into the empty net at 19:53. Pearson's 7th from Pavel Dorofeev and Shea Theodore, and that gets us to our 3-0 final score. Final shots were 37-31 Vegas. Calgary goes 0-4 on the power play. Vegas 1-4. With the man advantage this evening. 3 stars in the building, all Golden Knights. Number 3, Victor Olofsson. Number 2, Brett Howden. And your number 1 star with a 31-save shutout, Ilya Samsonov, in net for the Golden Knights. Hardest-working Flame, as selected by Megan Mickelson tonight, was Matt Coronato. With the loss, Flames fall to 17-12-7. They're back in action Tuesday at home to Vancouver, while Vegas improves to 25-8-3. They're back in action Tuesday at home to Montreal. That's our final summary, and that'll that'll start to wrap us up on our Flames Talk post-game show this evening. It's available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast. For everyone involved in Flames hockey tonight, for our broadcast crew of Derek Wills and Megan Mickelson, and for our outstanding producer, Azam Ali Nanji, my name is Pat Steinberg. Next up for the Flames is Tuesday night, New Year's Eve. Big game in the Pacific Division between the Flames and Vancouver Canucks. Scotiabank Saddledome, 7 o'clock faceoff, will be on the air at 6 o'clock with your Calgary Flames warm-up. Have yourself a wonderful rest of your weekend, or have a great week ahead. Final week or final days of 2024 are ahead of us now. Final score once again from Vegas this evening. Flames fall 3-0 to the Vegas Golden Knights. This has been your Flames Talk post-game show, available wherever you get your podcasts. And this has been Calgary Flames Hockey on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.